Welcome to an episode of the Feminist Woman Housewives podcast. My name's Sarah, and I'm going to be hosting today. I'm doing this interview as a part of the Narrating Ordained Women project that Cami has started. And today I'm going to be having a conversation with Brian. You want to say hi and introduce yourself?
I'm Brian. I'm a CNA, and I am a proud part of Ordained Women.
Great. And tell us anything else about yourself that you want, like where you live or your past church experience or, you know, hobbies, just kind of getting to know you.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I was raised in the church. I have been mostly active for the majority of it. I am 19 years old.
Tell us a little bit about how you came to be associated with Ordained Women, if there was any sort of progression or events that led you that way, like what's the story there?
Really, it was just the internet and either just seeing different blogs, or I'm part of a lot of the little Mormon groups like FMH or Mormon Stories or anything, and just seeing people post about it there. So I just found out about it through there, and then I just got on the website and emailed them and was like, hey, I'd like to put up a profile, and, you know, the rest is history.
Right. And so at this point in your life, what, why do you support women's ordination? Is it, is it like an intellectual thing? Is it a spiritual prompting? Where does that come from for you?
I guess I'm a big fan for equality. One of the biggest things is that I feel that blessings. Mm-hmm. I feel that the ability to bless those children and the people that are around them is kind of a huge, even though, you know, I personally cannot, I don't have the Melchizedek priesthood, just seeing my own father and just the idea, and, you know, reading about people like Eliza Arsenault, mm-hmm. and Young, who healed hundreds of people through the Relief Society, and, you know, totally, when I originally found out about it, I was totally blown away, and it's I don't know, I just think it's something special, and it's something that is kind of a unique connection between you and God, you know, just kind of, so, intellectually, but I just kind of feel like, to me, with, you know, religion and Christianity, I mean, it's in the Bible where they talk about, you know, it's, there's no black or white, Jew or Greek, male or female, all is one in Christ Jesus. And I just feel like if you, you know, try to add to these constructs and you try to, like, it just kind of corrupts the message and it pollutes it, and it just makes it a lot less pure than I feel like Christ intended.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. It's really hard to, you know, when you're part of the world and you can't help being part of the world, it's hard to look at different constructs that we have and say, okay, is this earthly or is this eternal? And is this, you know, a barrier to the kind of unity in the Zion community that Christ wants, or is it helping us? And I think,
You know, I mean, if you look at, I don't know, just reading about him, and he's like, so why are you trying to, I mean, this is definitely not, I'm not trying to say this is a direct comparison, but, you know, when they try to stone him for healing the blind man on the Sabbath, and he's like, I just healed somebody, like, I just gave somebody their sight that they've had in all the, you know,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yet, you know, like, which one of you wouldn't help one of your animals if you fell into a well? I mean, definitely, I'm not saying that that's exactly like it, but just kind of the idea of, like, you know, it's like, come on, guys, like, it's a little bit bigger than, anyway.
Yeah. So. Yeah, like, priorities. What is it really more important that we follow these rules? Which, you know, the rules can be good. They they can have wonderful purposes, but if you prioritize them over the important thing of like loving God and loving your brothers and sisters, then
and allowing, you know, your brothers and sisters to connect with God.
Yeah.
And I know, like, you know, you have the argument of, well, you know, we have lots of priesthood and we're doing fine, but it's like, okay, but I think in the book of instructions, I remember reading somewhere that you only have to have like 15 priesthood holders to have a ward.
Mm-hmm.
You
know?
And I mean, there are so many other churches that are fine with just, you know, either having a pastor or just kind of like a head clergy. And then, you know, you have everyone else is just kind of, you know, just normal churchgoers. And I mean, I feel like the priesthood and especially giving blessings allows you to connect with God and be able to become like him mm-hmm. in a way that is much more than, you know, just, you know, the act of passing the sacrament or being able to, you know, kind of deal with the responsibilities as a bishop or a stake president or a Sunday school president. I feel like it's a lot deeper than that, and it's a lot more meaningful because we, having a lay clergy, we're able to, you know, all of our members are able to kind of become like God and that, or kind of learn to become like God in that sense through through the responsibilities that the priesthood has.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think that it's very telling when we think about blessings and like you've mentioned, look back on our history. What Joseph Smith says to the Relief Society about how, like, if God blesses a woman's blessing with results, with a healing, then let all hold their tongues. It's very similar to what you were talking about with Christ in his response to being accused of doing a healing on the Sabbath. It's like, look, this causes results. This has a good outcome. So how can we say that God doesn't bless it? I don't know. It's just a lot to think about.
Yeah, and I mean, even in the Bible, I mean, if you look at, you know, there, I'm sorry, I'm just going like, oh, well, in the Bible, and I'm not giving anybody else since I've read the New Testament, it's been like a year or so, but where the 12 apostles who, you know, you would think would have kind of the priesthood authority tried to cast out the devil out of that person, and they couldn't, you know, and then Jesus comes along and is like, oh, ye of little faith, you know, how long will I have to suffer? Mm-hmm. And he goes and does it, and then, you know, you flip a couple chapters later, and, you know, they run to Jesus and they say, oh, well, we found this man casting out demons in your name. We told him to stop. And he's like, no, what are you doing? You know, whoever isn't against us is for us.
Yeah.
I mean, that right there, I think, is a pretty good argument for kind of priesthood being more than just, okay, you know, it's this group of people. And I guess I wanted to make sure that I know that I kind of am speaking from kind of a place of privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, like, I'm kind of this white middle class, you know, I've never really had any serious arguments with, you know, my bishop or stake president. I've never had my temple recommend forcefully taken away. So I guess, I mean, even though I support it, I wanted to make sure that, you know, everyone knew that.
That you recognize that.
Recognize that, you know, I have a little bit of privilege.
Do you think that plays into like why you feel comfortable sharing your support for women's ordination, or does it give you a different perspective that you think you want to share in terms of being a male ally instead of being a woman who's advocating for it for herself?
Well, I think I'm like, well, if this affects me this much and it's not even like directly happening to me, I'm like, how hurtful would it be to be on the other side of it mm-hmm. instead of kind of just watching it, you know, on the internet, watching the events take to actually be one of those people who, you know, does get their temple recommend taken away
mm-hmm.
or, you know, is, you know, goes through one of those awful experiences with, you know, a leader, and imagine, like, you know, if this is how this is affecting me and it's affecting my testimony, how is it going to be in one of those people's shoes?
Right, right. So have you attended, like, either of the priesthood session actions with ordained women?
Yes. I didn't go in October, but I did go in April, and it was wonderful. It was definitely one of the most memorable conference sessions I've had in a while.
Yeah. What was your experience like? What happened for you?
Well, so first off, the directions I got sent me to the wrong park.
Oh
Interesting. Come here, and I'm like, where is everybody?
no.
I'm like, did everybody like flake out? Am I the only one who wants to I'm here, you know, and I have my little button-down shirt, and it's all tucked in, and it's like 80 degrees, and I'm like, oh, this is horrible. So, the first thing I did was, I went to the temple for a little bit, just kind of on my own, just walking around the grounds, because I was like, well, did they already go? And that was a really interesting experience. I just kind of walked, and for one thing, when I was walking, I couldn't see the temple. It was totally blocked out by the other buildings around me, and the other buildings in, the Temple Square. So, it was the main one that was blocked out was the Joseph Smith building, and nothing against old Joseph Smith. I have him in the highest respect, but it was kind of an interesting metaphor to see the temple blocked out by a building dedicated to a man living in there. Also, I never quite realized how high the church office building was above.
It's super tall. And when you look at the skyline of Salt Lake and it's sitting right there next to the temple, it is kind of an odd feeling to see the administration, the corporate side of the church, like dwarfing the temple.
Yeah, like ridiculously dwarfing. I think it's the second tallest in Salt Lake, and I think not by that much either. I think the Wells Fargo building is only like 2 feet shorter.
Maybe.
Yeah. So that was kind of, I mean, I'm definitely not one of those people that's going to go off on tangents about, oh, well, because this certainly isn't the place for it. But it was kind of an interesting kind of a metaphor to how I was feeling that day. Another thing is, it was conference weekend. There were people everywhere. I was like, I have never met any of these people. But yet, if they knew this one little, if they knew that I was coming to this, like, it would be a divisive, it would be a divisor. It would be a dividing moment. And I felt divided from everyone in there because of, just this one, I guess, theological difference that I wasn't even, I mean, really, that was the first time I'd ever really done anything for it. I usually don't even post stuff about it on Facebook, so it's kind of sobering, I guess, in that sense. But at the same time, I felt peaceful and with God, and, was basically, just praying while I had a prayer in my heart while I walked, and just kind of prepping myself for it. And then I eventually found them. And that was really, really interesting. I was really grateful for the person they sent to meet us. I was actually the last, me and my friend Morgan were the last two people in line, and I can't remember her name, but the girl who greeted us was,
Kim Farah, I think.
she was very nice, and even though she had sat through like 500 people, she was still willing to give us, the time of day. And it was really nice to have kind of that moment of, even though feeling kind of ignored by the church as a body, it was nice to be listened by somebody.
It's true.
And it was, I don't know, it was nice to, I guess, it was nice to be in support of a group of people that really need supporting, instead of just sitting, on my couch, just kind of hanging out and eating food. No conference. I mean, it was nice. It was great to like just feel like you were supporting and helping a group of people that really needed it. So.
And have you had any notable experiences that you would want to share, like either positive or negative, as far as how people in your life, or maybe like people you don't know on the internet or whoever, the way people have responded to your support for women's ordination? Have you got any, flack for it or anything like that?
Well, my family hasn't been too stoked about it, I won't lie. Unfortunately, but I mean, I can understand where they're coming from. I mean, it's it's hard when you build your life around something and then you feel like that's being threatened by a person that you want to be happy more than anyone else, which is your child. I really haven't gotten too much. Like I said, I've never been called into the stake presidency or to the bishop's office or anything. I really, there were a couple people who came up to us in line and thanked us, which was really cool.
Yeah.
Have strangers, and you know, a lot of them told us they were ex-Mormons, and it was cool to just have random people come up. Besides that, honestly, not really. Just I try to support people online as much as I can whenever they'll talk about things that have been really hurtful in their lives. But yeah, I really have not gotten too much criticism for it besides that. I mean, I've talked to people about why I support it, and I've been able to kind of get my point across to a decent respect, not saying I changed my mind, but at least was listened to and kind of where they could see where I was coming from. So
right. And then probably as a final question, unless there's anything else you want to add after this, I'm curious to know what your hope is for the future. You know, I feel like in talking with some people about ordained women, there are some people who are like, you know, this is going to change. Like I know that for sure. I've received that confirmation. And then there are other people who are maybe like not sure one way or the other. And then there are other people who are like, no, I have no hope in things changing, but I have to be true to like, to what the spirit is telling me, you know? So it seems like there's a large like variety of what people think the outcome will be for this. And in a way how hopeful people are, for things to change, for new revelation to be received or things along those lines. How do you feel like you fit into that? What's your hope for the future, if you have anything?
Well, I do think it will happen eventually. I don't know when. I mean, whether it happens in a year or 30. I mean, really, I think right now, kind of how I feel about the church is that I remember at the Ordained Women movement, because there are some people that were sent like an hour or so ahead to make sure that, you know, gates weren't locked, or that, you know, make sure that, you know, we were going to be like safe and whatnot, and kind of prepare us for what was ahead. And said that the gate that we were coming out of, the which was the east one, was like they constantly locked and unlocked it, you know, like, because it's like they weren't quite sure what to do. And I kind of feel like that's where a lot of the brethren are, and not just with women's ordination. I think with, you know, gay rights and, you know, trying to figure out how to help people stay and still, you know, with kind of a lot of the history that's pretty easy to find, you know, I feel like they're kind of in a rock and a hard place where it's like, okay, well, if, you know, we go with the more liberal people, then, you know, we'll be like the community of Christ, and the more conservative people will leave. But then if we go with the conservative people, the liberal people will leave. So, I mean, other way, any way we go about this, people are going to leave.
Sure, yeah.
I feel for that. I definitely do not hold any judgment against the Quorum of the Twelve or any of the higher ups, because it's a tough situation and have kind of gotten ourselves into, you know, as far as trying to kind of make sense, help people kind of make sense in the next little bit. I am hopeful, but yeah, I just kind of feel like this is a point of transition, and you know, it kind of seems like the church is kind of locking and unlocking, where it's like, okay, well, you know, we won't let you into priesthood session, but then we're gonna acknowledge the Relief Society and the primary young woman's presidency as general authorities, you know, and you know, before that we'll have a woman pray. And, you know, it's kind of this, like, we're not quite sure what to do, so we're going to keep locking and unlocking the doors until we can hopefully find a middle ground. But I do think it will eventually happen. I think the internet has been a great catalyst towards that.
Yeah.
for better or for worse. And I don't know exactly when. I mean, really kind of where I am, because I used to be really like, oh my gosh, all these changes are happening, and I kind of have just kind of been to the point where I'm like, well, we'll just have to kind of wait and see what happens, and then just give support we can, and Definitely just have to see what happens.
Yeah, no, that's true. And yeah, I can relate to that a lot because there are days when I'm like, why wouldn't we be hopeful? You know, like
Exactly.
we have the possibility of like continuing revelation and you know, I think of like President Uchtdorf's talk in Priesthood Session where he talks about
I mean, really, like to say in conference, like not everything that you're going to read. I mean, like it was pretty, even though he didn't go right out and say, blacks in the priesthood or Adam God or polygamy or any of the things that we've kind of distanced ourselves from, kind of our push with theosis. It was definitely awesome to see a member of the 12 be like, hey guys, like we this you don't have to take everything quite as, quite so literally, and you
Yeah.
can follow your own conscience instead of trying to figure out some crazy mental gymnast way to make this all fit together, because if you do, good luck.
Yeah. That's, I mean, as far as him acknowledging, hey, sometimes we get things wrong. Please just like know that and don't let it challenge what you do know. And then at the priesthood session just this last April when he was talking about, are you sleeping through the restoration? And I just feel like, yeah, there is a restoration going on and it continues.
Yeah.
And you know, it so sometimes I'm like, yeah, there's lots of reasons to be hopeful. And then other times I'm like, okay, I don't know.
Kind of depends on the day for sure.
It does.
Yeah, and I think that, I remember there was a lady who was in line at Ordained Women who her husband had gone to this training in Georgia where I think Elder Cook was presiding, and his basic response for Ordained Women was just, the brethren are not totally, we're not completely on the same page here. We're not totally united on how we feel about this, how we're going to handle this. So it's not your job to pass judgment, it is your job to love and edify and try to help these people basically find a place in the church,
Yeah.
which unfortunately probably some could do a little bit of a better job than others, but it's interesting to kind of hear, like, once again, a general authority be like, look guys, like we are still trying to figure this thing out. We are not quite sure. 'Cause I mean, especially you look at the older ones. I mean, not only do they live in a different generation, they were born in a totally different world
Yeah.
than us. I mean, things have changed so much. And I'm not saying that I am totally happy with maybe some of their choices as far as their stance on issues like women's ordination and some of the other more, like, I guess, hot button ones. But I mean, they're people just like us, and we just gotta try to roll with
Yeah,
it.
it's true. And I think it is important and it's difficult, but for me at least, I feel like it's important to kind of think about stewardship. And it's like I know that I have stewardship over myself. I know that I am responsible to follow my own personal revelation. And I'm not in the position of being an apostle or a prophet, obviously. And like they have that stewardship, and the way that they handle that is their responsibility. And I cannot claim to know that like they're doing it wrong because it's their stewardship. It's their relationship with God and it's their calling to take care of that. And I think it's important even when with our leaders, as much as we want to think that they're perfect, like that we give them a little grace and that we just say like
Oh, for
I
sure.
don't know everything that's going into this decision for them and I trust them to fulfill that calling and to know that it's their stewardship.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, I think I heard a couple weeks ago, it was like in the Catholic Church, the theology says that the Pope is infallible, but no one believes it. And in Mormon theology, we believe that our leadership is infallible, but nobody wants to believe it. And I'm like, yep, that kind of hit the nail on the head
It's
there.
true.
As far as like, and I think that's getting better too. I think really thing to do is just to kind of, I don't know, if I was to give advice to anybody, I would probably say, focus on, your emotional well-being and how much you are can, handle you know, the amount of involvement either within ordained women or being an activist for gay rights or any of that thing, and as well as the church, and kind of be like, you know, and prayerfully kind of figure out, this is where I am comfortable being. And because, you know, it does take a toll emotionally. I've had to kind of cut back a little bit as far as my involvement with stuff, because it was just like too much, you know.
Yeah.
Too much going on at the same time, and kind of just don't fall asleep in the restoration.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much, Brian.
You can do that for sure. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.